Thank you for downloading the Dunkcast, featuring some of the best bits from City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
Hello, this is Duncan Barks from City Talk Breakfast, which you can hear weekday mornings 6 through until 10 on City Talk 105.9. And this is our Dunkcast, or our Dunkcast, depending on which part of the UK you're listening to this in. And it features some of the stuff we get up to on the City Talk Breakfast show. Over the next 30 minutes, you're going to hear all kinds of stuff, including another Duncan's Donut talking about left-handed pants. Yes, you heard me correctly. My conversation with Free Liverpool fan Michael Shields. He came in for a chat on the day of his birthday and also the week that his book gets released. Liverpool man going on hunger strike. His name is Gary Striker. He's going to stop eating to try and get a clear message to the government regarding compensation for thalidomide victims. Hear my conversation with him. The Wirral spy car is yet again in the headlines. Sadly, they haven't scrapped it. It's still going around spying on motorists on the Wirral. Find out what I have to say about that. And also, Labour's Riverside MP Louise Elman came in for a chat. She's had a horrible week. One of the incidents that she had to tackle was an asylum seeker who doused themselves with petrol and was threatening to spark a flame. She tackled them. The man is still alive. Hear more about that over the next 30 minutes on the Dunkcast. The Dunkcast, courtesy of City Talk 105.9.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
The lady sitting opposite me in my City Talk studio is Labour's Riverside MP Louise Elman. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. Thank you very much for coming in. Before we get cracking with the newspapers, I have to ask you this, because it's been quite a, well, suffice to say, interesting week for you so far.
Well, yes, it has been an interesting week. I did have the incident on Monday when somebody who came to see me about their asylum claim got pretty upset and went out of my office door and doused themselves in petrol and sat on the floor with a lighter held close to their clothes. So that's not something I'm used to happening.
No, and the reports I was hearing and obviously, you know, talking to you about this, that you managed to get the lighter or the matches off them so in order to ensure their future safety.
Yes, I did that. I managed to persuade the gentleman concerned to hand me his lighter. But it was a scary moment, and I feel very upset about him. He was very much in despair, although he hadn't actually got a refusal, but he thought he was going to get one on his claim. And, of course, it could have put other lives in danger as well as his own. So a very upsetting incident.
Just answer me this. In your role as an MP, does that kind of situation happen often in terms of someone coming to see you about their asylum case and then obviously an extreme course of action that might follow? Is that kind of a regular occurrence?
Well, thankfully, no. I haven't had.
I'm not talking about
like
people dousing themselves in petrol.
No,
what I mean is, in your role as an MP, do you deal with cases like that gentleman's on a regular basis?
Well, I do often see people who are feeling pretty desperate, or people who are very upset, and people show their distress in different ways.
Okay, well, it's good to have you in the studio this morning. Thank you for coming in. Newspaper-wise, I know you've been armed with a mug of tea and you've been thumbing your way through the tabloids and broadsheet papers. What have you come across?
Well, I've been looking at the Post and I've been looking at the Nationals, and I like a couple of stories in the Post. The Daresbury Science and Innovation Campus being seen as the most outstanding science park in the UK, and that's linked with Liverpool University. It's about high-level science. I think that's great. And reports of the environment conference held here yesterday and talking about the end of the Mersey Basin campaign. Now, I was involved in that when it first started in the 80s, and it was all about cleaning up the River Mersey and surrounding areas. And it's great to think that the job's been done and that it's been wound down. The Nationals have got some pretty heavy stories, a lot about Lady Scotland and the problems that she's got. Perhaps more positive stories about Trident and perhaps reducing Trident, which I think is very good news, and stories about the ongoing international discussions on climate change.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those points that you've just mentioned. I mean, the Mersey's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, we did a dip recently in the River Mersey just to prove that having a swim in the Mersey is something you can do safely now and not end up with some nasty rash or stomach bug or whatever. And I think there is still a view in this city, when I've talked to people and I said, would you ever swim in the Mersey? Like, oh, no way. So even though it is clean now, we still have to get the message out that, you know, a lot of investment's been put into cleaning up the river. Now you can take a dip in the Mersey, it's perfectly safe.
Well, there's still a way to go, and you can never do enough in terms of cleaning up the seas and our rivers. But we have gone a long way, and I just found it, I think, a bit of satisfaction, a bit of pleasure seeing that the massive campaign that started in the 80s, because things were so terrible, is now actually winding down. But of course, the work does have to go on.
You mentioned Baroness Scotland and some of the newspapers, particularly papers like the Mail. I would dare to suggest a bit of a witch hunt going on regarding Baroness Scotland. Some newspapers calling for her resignation. Do you think she should resign?
I think that she is in a difficult position. I think she's going to have to assess public reaction to what's happened. I do think it's a great shame. I think she is a very good minister, but she has got herself into difficulties, and I think we can sympathise with the position she finds herself in, but I think she's just going to have to see how it all develops.
You see, I was ruminating earlier this morning on this radio show about the fact that if you're in a position like that and you're employing people, I would have thought there'd be security checks made, and I would have thought if you're someone like Baroness Scotland with her particular portfolio of responsibilities, you'd want to check yourself to make sure anyone you're employing, they're squeaky clean.
Well, you would think so, but I think that often it's looking back in retrospect that you think things are obvious, and perhaps just in the hurly-burly of life that she's getting on, concentrating on a job, and she's employing someone, and she did make checks, but it appeared that some of the documents were fake ones and she didn't copy something she should have copied, might not have seen at the time to be of major importance to her, but of course it has turned out to be important.
Is the hurly-burly of life an excuse, though, because of a person in the street, Joel, Joanne, and blogs in the street made that mistake, they would feel the full thrust of the law, so why shouldn't she?
Well, I don't think it can be an excuse, and I don't think she's saying that, but perhaps it's some kind of explanation about how this sort of thing could happen when it's something to do with her personal life rather than what she's doing in her work. But she is in some difficulties, and I think she has got a big problem there.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barnes.
There's a cat on the fourth floor, and it was literally managed to get onto the balcony, and it was squealing away, and it looked like it was doomed.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, this big hero fire officer comes along, and they get the thing, and they go all the way up to the fourth floor, and they grab the cat, and it's like a big they all live happily ever after. So well done, Merseyside Fire Brigade.
And I bet there are people gathering in the street below, more concerned about the cat than any human beings that might have been inside.
Well, it's funny because some of them actually laughed because they weren't sure whether they actually saved the cat first or the people that were on the roof, and they were having a laugh and having a toss up which one to save. And I think actually the cat got saved first, but don't quote me on that.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks, the show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
The saga continues this morning, ladies and gentlemen. You know, this is a bugbear of mine. If you're living on the Wirral, we have this smart car that drives around with its telescopic camera spying on you and I. This is an initiative by Wirral Council, the same council that want to shut down libraries and sporting facilities and town halls on the Wirral. They've got money for a spy car, but not money to keep something open in your part of the Wirral. A disabled driver was hit with a parking fine because Wirral Council's spy car could not see his blue badge. The smart car, which does the job of a traffic warden, uses a camera to photograph vehicles parked illegally. The owner of the car is then sent a fine through the post. But the council last night apologised after sending tickets to a disabled driver who was displaying a blue badge. The camera could not see the dashboard of his vehicle, so did not register that he was parked legally. Well, isn't this just another reason why this smart car should be taken down to the local scrap metal yard and recycled? They bang on about, we're going to crack down on parking. The system doesn't work. You've got your little smart car there, this telescopic camera, spying on people. And yet, you got a disabled fella here. He had his disabled blue badge rightly displayed on his dashboard. He was parked somewhere, but no, the spy car doesn't like it, because all the spy car sees is a car somewhere where it thinks it shouldn't be. And what does it do? Does it investigate further? Does the driver of the smart car not think to go and have a look at the car? Of course not, because that would involve using a little bit of common sense and some brain power. So what do? They do what local authorities have started doing across the land. They send you the fine first, and then expect you to protest your innocence later. I thought we used to live in a country until you were innocent until proven guilty, but now, particularly if you're in the domain of Wirral Council, it's very simple. You're guilty as far as they're concerned, and then you have to prove your innocence. Let's get rid of this spy car.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barnes.
Have you ever seen anyone who is normal, who's actually admitted to a UFO sighting? Normal
people don't do it. It's all the freaks of society. It's always the kind of people who you would cross the road to avoid. You know I'm right about this. It's sad men in their late 40s, early 50s who live at home with mum in grey anoraks. It's kind of like the slightly weird, musty-smelling people who you don't want to sit next to in the train. They're always the people who come out and go, saw a UFO last night, or I've been abducted by aliens. You know I'm right.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks, the show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
There's a gentleman who's in my studio right now who starts a hunger strike today, and I wanted to get him on the show before the press conference officially takes place at 10:30 this morning at Blenheim Lakeside Hotel in Sefton Park. The gent I'm talking about is Gary Skiner. Gary's a thalidomide victim, and he starts his hunger strike today in protest at the government's refusal to pay compensation to the users of the anti-morning sickness drug. And Gary's in my studio this morning. Morning, Gary.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
I'm all right. Listen, thank you very much for coming in. I know it's a busy day for you. I mean, first off, I'm reading a lot of reports, and this word victim gets used a lot, yet it seems to me you're not actually a victim because you're still embracing life.
When you look at the right across the board, there's 453 surviving thalidomide victims.
Yeah.
On the scale of things, I am extremely, extremely lucky with a capital E. Fortunately, my legs weren't affected. It's upper limb deformity. I've got a 9-inch left arm and a 14-inch right, and minus thumbs, minus wrists, minus elbows. But apart from that, everything's hunky-dory.
And you're the second person who was born in the UK with these side effects of the drug prescribed to combat morning sickness in the 50s and early 1960s.
That's correct, yeah.
OK, before we try and understand why you're doing your hunger strike today, because it seems to me it's almost like you've got to be in a pretty desperate state of mind to do something like a hunger strike. Just give us an understanding this morning of the kind of compensation you received so far, because the reason you're doing the hunger strike is basically you feel that, well, victims of thalidomide do not feel that they're getting their due. They don't get the money they need in order to live, you know, the life they want to live. So what do you get at the moment?
Well, basically, when the settlement was first discussed in 1972,
yeah,
I received for this a measly sum of £11,800, which was a personal settlement.
Right.
Take back to 1972, probably equated today around about £75,000. Right. That was a lump sum payment in 1972. They then set up a trust fund with £20 million, which over years has grown to somewhere in the region of £80 million.
Right.
That trust fund is using more than the interest it makes per annum. So therefore, it's dwindling away year on year. We went in conflict with Diageo, used to be Guinness, who morally did the right thing in 2005 and agreed a covenant of 8.5 million right. per annum to pay into the trust, which still is that's not even touching the surface. It's still, the trust fund is going down. It services 453 severely disabled people, people with no arms and legs. If you can imagine what 24-hour care would be for someone who has to be dipped in the bath, has to be fed, sure, every meal made, or the 24-hour constant and proper kit, somebody who knows what they're doing, a trained nurse.
All right. So the bottom line is the money that's there is not enough money.
Absolutely.
And as victims of thalidomide get older, you need greater care. So therefore, the money's going to be used at a greater rate and it's just going to disappear.
Yeah. The ironic thing here is if you get stopped on the way home from here because you've had excess alcohol or drugs in your blood, the police will say under Section 72 of the Road Traffic Act, we're charging you with driving under the influence. The time this happened to us, there was no law in place for us to sue the government. Had there been a vehicle for us to sue them, we would all be looking at multi-million pound settlements. In 1968, as a direct result of thalidomide, if you go through Hansard, which of course is the legal record of everything that goes on in a house, every single day from 1959 up until 1968, thalidomide was mentioned in the house. And in 1968, this country had the advent of the Food and Drugs Act, which was a direct result of our tragedy. We were the horse that bolted through the gate. Everybody else now is ring-fenced. Every tablet you take from the chemist is secured because of us. We were the guinea pigs, but it all went wrong. And people said, that's the biggest debacle evermore worldwide. It can never happen again. We have to put laws in place to ensure it doesn't. If it happened today, in retrospect, with the laws that are there because of us now, we would all be looking at, I would probably be looking at £2.5 million payout.
You start a hunger strike today It's a very desperate step to take. Why? Why have you reached this stage? Why have you decided to take this course of action?
Purely and simply, as I just explained in that last sentence earlier, is that I've got no other means of protest, really. Right.
But I'm guessing you've spoken to the government about this so far. I mean, this must be one of the final steps you could take to get your message heard.
Yeah, I mean, we've said to the government, look, you know, we've given them very, very tangible evidence as to why they should be doing it. I mean, if somebody flies over your house tomorrow and bombs you, if you go to a farm and you catch E. coli, there's a health service to make sure that doesn't happen. There's an air force to make sure you don't get bombed. We were damaged on these shores under licence. They gave it a licence. Not only did they give it a licence, but they made it exempt of what was VAT then, which was a sort of a sweetener to get GPs to prescribe it.
So you're talking to the government, basically there's sympathy there, but the message is not getting through. So this is the ultimate kind of step, indeed sacrifice, that you're prepared to take and make in order to get the message through.
The message has got through loud and clear to them. Mm. It's just basically, if you can send lads to Afghanistan and not give them an helicopter to fight, I mean, basically, you're dealing with people who have fiddled their expenses, and most of us can't even pick up a calculator to fiddle our expenses. At the end of the day, they're uncaring, they don't want to know, and that's all three parties, that's not singling anybody out. Mike O'Brien, who is a QC, who obviously earns his living within the legal profession, morally should understand that this government they're culpable for what happened. It's time to come to the table and say, enough is enough.
And that's what you hope to achieve by doing the hunger strike today.
Well, I'm hoping so. And my daughters are heartbroken over...
Well, I want to talk about your daughters because you're a dad as well. And I think there's a very interesting aspect to that. But it's not just you who's going on hunger strike today. It's your mum as well.
Yeah, my mum's 72. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, OK, we don't think like a mother does. But, you know, there's only one woman in this world that really, really, really genuinely loves you. And I don't mean that any way disrespect to your wife or your girlfriend. Yeah, you come from here. Yeah. And every time I bend down to pick up an envelope and I can't get it, or I drop change, or I struggle to put a jumper on or whatever, she feels it. That woman cries herself to sleep most nights thinking, it's down to me. And unfortunately, it's not down to her.
You've got two daughters, Gary. You're going on hunger strike today. All of the reports that I'm reading is you're saying you're prepared to go all the way if necessary. What do you mean by all the way as necessary?
Well, if I was diagnosed with a cardiac problem. We won't know till March next year exactly what that is. Mm. I'm hoping it's not the start of cardiomyopathy, which means that a part of your heart's dying. Right. If that's the case, there's two Liverpool victims in particular that I feel very, very deeply for. It was Freddie Asprey and Kevin Dinella. Both of them, no arms and no legs. They're just torsos. If they're going to live longer than me, then I would like to think that my martyrdom, if you want to call it that, would make people sit up and say, well, if somebody felt that strongly to pass away over this, we need to do something about it.
So you're prepared to go on hunger strike today, even though the consequence of denying your body the food it needs could actually have serious implications to your long-term health?
Yes.
What do your daughters make about this, Gary? You know, I'm a father and I've got a five-year-old little girl. You've got a couple of girls. Tell me, father to father, what are they saying to you about this?
My eldest one is saying, that's just me, Dad. You'll never tell him differently. He's stubborn, he's pig-headed. And the youngest girl, we're trying to convince her that, you know, maybe not be necessary this, but I've sat down with her and explained that there's certain things in life that you've got principles about. As you get older, you'll understand that. I've got very strong principles over this. I've been damaged by some unknown years ago, and they've gone and hidden down a rat hole. I need to pull them out of that rat hole. They may not decide to come out. If they don't come out, then, you know, the ultimate sacrifice will be me.
The daughter who doesn't understand why you're doing this, is she trying to convince you otherwise? Is she trying to stop her dad from doing this?
Yeah, but she knows that. She laughs, Holly, and says, you know, I know I'm wasting my breath, I know I'm wasting my time, but they're not worth this, you know. I mean, you've got a talent, you can make people laugh. You have a good lifestyle as it is. And I'm saying to you, it's not for me, it's for those that can't and won't stand up and be counted and put their head up above the parapet.
Gary, I've never spoken to someone who's about to go on hunger strike. Where's your mind this morning in all of this? Where's your head right now? How are you feeling about it all?
It's a daunting task. I'm not looking forward to it. My GP says that I've got to watch kidney-wise and things, so that affects the blood pressure, which in turn might upset the heart. I'm hoping upon hope. What I would really like, and while I'm on your station, I'm so pleased that justice was seen to be done for Michael Shields. I'm hoping that I can call upon the good people of Merseyside on your programme today to try and support me in the way that Michael Shields was supported, to give me that level of support. Liverpool, Everton, Tranmere, even down the M62, dare I say it. You know, the whole of the North West to back this campaign. Google thalidomide, look into it before you decide to give me your support. It's unjust, it's not right, and it's gone on for 50 years, and enough's enough.
10:30 this morning, there's a press conference taking place at the Blenheim Lakeside Hotel in Sefton Park. You'll be outlining in greater detail to the world's media as to why your hunger strike is starting today. And then what happens, Gary? Do you lock yourself away in a room and refuse all food?
Well, I'm hoping not to. I mean, I'm not exactly the slimmest of chaps. You know, a couple of people said to me, well, we won't have to worry about you for at least 6 years. It's the nutritional starvation that's going to cause me the problem, not so much the fact that I've got a lot of fat to burn. I have lost 4 stone since the 23rd of May. I was 26 stone. This is not a drastic way of going on a further reduction. I do realise the implication. It is deadly, deadly serious. And I just think it's wrong that anyone should have to go to these extremes in this day and age.
OK, Gary, we're going to monitor your campaign and the progress of it over the coming days, weeks and months. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Duncan, welcome to Merseyside. Well done.
Bless you.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
The fastest man in the world. Bolt's new 100-metre record.
Bolt.
You see, I can't get excited.
How
so we ran really fast. Woo.
One, it's a massive sporting achievement. And two, don't you find that amazing as human beings someone can actually run that distance in such a short amount of time?
No. I'm sorry, it just doesn't... What is the point? You know, he's not curing cancer. He's run really fast. Well done.
It's a massive human achievement. All right, he's not got the cure for cancer, but it's still a hell of an achievement. I couldn't do it.
But would you want to, quite frankly, Duncan, unless it was to the bar at last orders?
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks, the show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
But it is with great sadness this morning I bring you news of the end of one of the great musical acts of our time. A massively popular duo have called time on their career, which has spanned 4 decades. They are the band who opened for Led Zeppelin at the 1979 Nebworth Festival. They wrote the hook for Eminem's smash hit single, My Name Is. They inspired Pete Doherty to pick up a guitar for the first time. They had 3 top 10 hits, and they supported the Beatles on their last ever European tour. This morning on City Talk Breakfast, here at City Talk 105.9, we pay tribute to Chaz and Dave. A sad day for music, I think you will agree. Chaz and Dave, who have split up after 4 decades of hits. Sorry, that should read, have split up after 4 hits.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
I've been banging on this morning about this text thing called LOL. L-O-L. I don't know what it means. I don't know if it means laugh out loud or lots of love, because people will say it to me at the beginning of text and at the end of text. Kimberly and Allison says, Duncan, it does mean laugh out loud. And this one says, Dunk, you think that's bad? I keep getting one that says Rolf. At the end of my text, the first time it happened, I thought I had a text to Mr. Rolf Harris. I'm looking at the letters, I'm thinking, what on earth could that stand for? Rolf. I've got absolutely no idea what does Rolf stand for.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks, the show that isn't afraid to say what you're thinking.
Listen, tell me this, because, you know, I've been doing this breakfast show over the last few weeks. You've rarely been out of the headlines here in Liverpool and indeed across the United Kingdom. When you wake up now, is it kind of sunk in that you're finally, you know, you're out and kind of like you've reached another chapter in your life?
Yeah, the last few days, definitely. It's just being back to normal, just doing my normal things that I've been doing for years. So last few days have been like pleasant enough, just going around, just doing what I want and not being told, oh, go here, do this, go here, do that. So it's just been at my own pace.
Which is good, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was your, well, on Friday, you received the official royal pardon. What was that like? What happens when you get a royal pardon? I've never spoken to anyone who's got a royal pardon.
No one really knew what the procedure was or what happened. So it was sort of, I weren't expecting. I mean, my lawyer, John Beat, said he'd been harassing them. And no, they were like, they were with making the decision about the pardon. They were the same, no, they didn't want to know all this and that. But in the end, he got a radar, man. He said, like, it was a surprise to me, Bertie. I never knew about it. He could have come out of the blue.
What do you get? Do you get a bit of paper saying this is a royal pardon?
Yeah, it's just like more or less a certificate saying, like, we more or less, like, quash the conviction.
Your book's out on Thursday. Obviously, people are going to find out more about that as the week continues and read more about it. Are there any messages you're trying to get across in the book, or is it just looking back at basically the journey you've had and, let's be honest, the nightmare of the last few years?
It's kind of like the diary of the last few years, but I think if you were to read it, the message would be like, be careful, because it can happen so easy and it happens so quick, and it can happen to anyone. So you just all got to be careful when you go to places like Bulgaria, and you put your faith in their system. Sometimes it just doesn't help you.
What else is in the book, Michael? I mean, there's a message there about being careful travelling abroad, and I think that that's the one clear thing that people can take away from your experience. But is there anything else that we can look forward to reading?
Yeah, especially Liverpool fans, you can all relive Istanbul again. I mean,
yeah.
Especially for me and my mates, the week building up to it and what we were up to, and then the match itself, and then obviously you've got the down part, which happens after it. So it's not just a big depression book where you're going to read. It, there's a few laughs in it as well, which people like.
I want to ask you a question, and this is only because this is of personal interest. I've talked to various people who have spent some time, against their will in prison, and people from all walks of life, including the disgraced MP Geoffrey Archer, and various other MP. And one of the things that I've always asked them is when the door kind of closes behind you on the first night inside, I've never experienced it. You must be totally alone. What actually goes through your mind?
You're thinking, like, what do we deserve to be? What have I done in the past? If I've done something that bad, you try and justify why you're in that position, because there's not only you can come up with to say, this is why I deserve to be. So it's just like, I don't know, there's so many emotions, like your brain's just ticking at 100 miles an hour, just going over and over everything, and it's just, I don't know, there's no one like overriding feeling, it's just a mix of emotions.
Okay, let's focus on the positive. I hope you don't mind me asking that question, because I was curious to get your answer. Let's focus on the positive. Today's your birthday. The book's out on Thursday. Where do you go from here? Because I'm guessing the publication of the book, almost, you can argue, and psychologists say, Michael, they use this word about closure, don't they? They go, it's closure, you move on, you draw a line. What's next for you? What do you want to do? I mean, when I've heard you do the press conferences and read some of the interviews and stuff, it's a case of just going back to be a 20-something lad in Liverpool. But what does that mean for you?
Just a normal job, just a normal, going the game and going around, being out, going to see my mates and go for a drink of a weekend. It's boring, but that's all I want, just it.
Well, it's not boring considering what you've been through over the last few years. What kind of job are you looking for?
I don't know yet. I'm still waiting for it. I'm still looking around.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. Weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
In a world full of bungling bureaucrats, power-crazed politicians, jumped-up pen pushers, and the plain old stupid, one man fights a lone battle for sanity, armed with a sword of vitriol and a shield of common sense. Duncan Barks takes on the Pillocks the only way he can, by awarding them the title of Duncan's Donuts.
I've worn some pants in my time. You're a bloke, you're listening to this, you might have bought some pants. But are you a man listening to this across Liverpool, North Wales, Northwest England, who is left-handed? Do you find it necessary to have some left-handed pants? Have you bought some? Are you now grateful that such an item has been created? Specially designed underpants
for left-handed men are going on sale from today. The pants will have a horizontal slit on top of the gusset rather than a vertical one on the right to save wearers time when they visit the loo. You can buy them in Debenhams. Go down to Liverpool One. Go on a shopping spree later today if you're a left-handed bloke and you want to save some time when you go to the loo. Some bloke from Debenhams has said left-handed men, I apologise for this, have to reach much further into their pants, performing a Z-shaped manoeuvre through 280-degree angles before achieving the result the right-handed men perform with ease. He added the launch of the new style by underwear brand Hom was a step towards equality. Now listen to me. For decades, for centuries even, left-handed men have managed to go to the loo perfectly okay without having specially designed underpants. How much additional extra time does it take if you're a left-handed geezer to go to the loo? Oh, my heart bleeds. You've got to perform a Z-shaped manoeuvre through two 180-degree angles before achieving the result the right-handed men perform with ease. I mean, additionally, in terms of time, what does that actually add on to your going to the loo experience? I'll tell you, about 2 seconds. Underpants for left-handed men. I've never heard anything so ridiculous in my entire life. You lot who invented it, you donuts!
Dunkin's Donuts.
Find out more about City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks at citytalk.fm. We hope you've enjoyed the Dunkcast. If you have, please download again next week.